That was our last speaker.
Thank you. I'll bring it back to the board. Commissioner Rockin.
Thank you. I suspect people are not up for long speeches that are a complete explanation of my worldview in relation to public transit. So I'm going to cut to the chase. The question before us is, should we keep moving forward with a plan that has a big sticker shock price on the beginning of it? People are, oh my God, $1 billion. The item before this one was for $14 billion to be spent on transit items over the next 25 years in Santa Cruz County. $14 billion, of which $7 billion we already have in place. They already think they have the money in place for it. So, transportation projects are expensive. They're not cheap. We shouldn't, wilt at the notion that it's going to be expensive to build some kind of a system. I honestly believe that in the end, if you take out the track for a recreational, what will be essentially a recreational trail, you'll never get it back for a public transit system. That's what sort of motivates me to not be in favor of just tearing out the tracks and building, as Brian Peoples and others might like, a cheaper trail down the middle of the corridor. So I'm going to move the staff recommendation that we proceed with this. I think it'd be a mistake to start carving away at the $1 billion. Oh, it's not going to be that much money. It's going to be only half of that or two-thirds of it. I'll put money down on this. When we're all done with this thing, it's going to be a lot more than $1 billion before we're finished with it. That's what these things cost. Let's get real about them. And that's not enough to make us walk away from something that's going to make a difference 50 and 100 years from now. And that's why I'm supporting the staff recommendation on this item. Thank you.
I'll second the motion for purposes of discussion. I don't totally agree with the maker of the motion in terms of the potential cost. I don't feel I'm a tea reader and know what the future is going to hold. I think it's important to really evaluate high costs and make sure that they're legitimate. One of the speakers proposed a peer review. I think it's worth considering this. In the past, the commission has had other consultants do major highway studies, and when the commission saw how much those projects were going to cost, they asked to get a group of experts together and review the technical reports and come back with what they think is, it could be totally correct. It could not be. I mean, the estimates, and I want to thank staff for the work on this. It's impressive. There's a lot of really detailed information in it, and it may be totally correct, but it is conservative. It is a conservative view, and I think it's reasonable for the commission to look at it. At what the future may hold conservatively. On the other hand, if there is a chance for rail to be ultimately feasible, I think that that's very important as well. And if there's some way to get a system that may not be including everything that we'd like to include, or that it would be good to include, but it allows for it to happen because it comes in at a cost that actually is can be implemented. I think that we need to be able to look at that. So I really would encourage that the feasibility report have a kind of a range of what the different what the total costs might add up. At a more conservative end and a more flexible end, so that that I think it will give greater credibility, and it would also give us some options to look at probably during the environmental phase if it moves to the environmental phase, because there need to be alternatives looked at. So I'm very appreciative of the work that's been done. I think ultimately there are real questions about whether it's going to be feasible to have passenger rail service in this, in our county. And I think it's important to try to have a realistic sense of what that might be. But I think there are lots of assumptions to come up with 140, as I figured it out with my poor math, the construction, all the different contingencies and other costs total 144% of the construction cost. I mean, the actual cost. It doesn't say anywhere what that cost would be, but all that total amount of $980 billion is adding on all the contingencies. So it's important to consider, I think, a range of options, as well as having an understanding of, what a more conservative approach might cost, which, as you say, it could even cost more than that, but it could also cost less than that. And I think we need to look at that end of things as well. Thank you.
So that's not an amendment. That's just a suggestion that you have for cost reduction strategies.
Well, I don't know. Let me ask the director. It's been unclear to me whether the feasibility study is going to have just a project and that's it, or whether there will be alternatives that will also be incorporated in that study.
Sure. So I will just say that projects as they are developed are dynamic, right? And we are working off of existing information that we have today. So this is a snapshot in time, and these are estimates, right? Just to put that out there as a caveat. In terms of the future project development phases, including environmental design and beyond, it is, advisable, I suppose, from staff that we have as few options or alternatives as possible when we move into the formal CEQA process. And the reason for that is it's very expensive to study multiple alternatives, right? So if we are adding alternatives here, there, and kind of everywhere along our line, it could definitely add to the professional services and project management costs for the project to do all the analysis of those alternatives. So our intention, staff is trying to narrow it down as much as we possibly can before moving into the more formal analysis process.
Well, certainly that makes sense. But as you know, the CEQA process requires analysis of alternatives. So I agree, there shouldn't be a huge range of alternatives, but I think it would be helpful to have, two, maybe three is what normally for me seems to be a good CEQA, good environmental impact report approach to actually giving the public and the decision makers an ability to make some choices. And obviously, this is so complicated because there's so many areas that could be where there could be alternatives. So I appreciate your concern around that. But I think, from my point of view, having one or two alternatives that would provide for, a less expensive approach would be appreciated.
Are you suggesting, for example, that we would reduce some of the contingencies? I'm trying to understand what an alternative of the kind you're thinking about would look like. Because, we could do that. We could say, instead of going 50% at one point, they had that, just threw a bunch of stuff in and added some more just to really have a big number. Are you just recommending that they look at some lower number? Or, what would an alternative that still looks at what, the actual studies they did at the bridges look like?
Well, having not seen the bridge studies, some of those bridges are historic bridges. Okay. And it would be problematic to change, make all the bridges concrete. It's certainly if you to rehabilitate a bridge would be a lot less permanent than building a concrete bridge. We learned that with the Westcliff Drive Bridge. Right. Yet the Westcliff Drive Bridge over the railroad tracks was rehabilitated and lasting a long time. The concern that, you know, the staff concerned that, well, it really would be problematic to have to stop the train service to replace the bridge is true, but there may be some bridges where rehabilitation could happen over time that where that wouldn't be necessary or it wouldn't be as problematic. I just think there needs to be some looking at, from what little I got from this, what I understood from the staff report, looking at replacing all the timber bridges. We did get some testimony that, you know, it was true. Those bridges were carrying huge freight trains not that long ago. So would they fall apart in 10 years? Would they fall apart in 20 years? I don't know. But I think it's worth looking at, you know, some option that doesn't really require replacement, and what would it take to rehabilitate them, and how long would that rehabilitation likely last?
So I think what some of the concern is that we want to see different alternatives for some of the bridge designs, because I think currently we're looking at sort of the Cadillac with all the bells and whistles. And if we could provide alternatives that are like the utilitarian Toyota Camry that will probably outlive, you know, the Cadillac, that those are the kind of alternatives that we're looking at, right? In bridge design.
When Andy started, he said maybe we need a range. I'm sympathetic to something suggesting that. I mean, what are we asking staff to go do? They've done this study. They've looked at how much these are going to cost. They come up with an estimate. And we might, and again, they've explained why they added the various contingencies for a variety of things. So I'd be sympathetic if you want to change the motion to suggest that they, in addition, bring us back something that, you know, looks at the possibility of reducing some of these costs with the possible strategy of not having the bridges last as long as they would if they were built to the Cadillac standard or something. I don't know the right kind of language, but is that what you're looking for?
Well, to the extent it's like looking at some alternative cost, which could include bridges, I don't want to put a burden on staff that's unreasonable, because it could be endless. On the other hand, I think in order to really, it is important to really provide some alternative to what we're seeing today. I mean, it's rare that these things are either or. Either you don't do it at all or you do it this way. That's sort of the way it can come across. And I think that's not, you know, we need to see, at least for me, I don't believe that there can't be alternatives that would have less of a cost, less of an impact. So that's what, so I would accept the motion that the change to just come back with
cost-saving alternatives.
Yeah, a less costly alternative along with the main ones they're providing.
Yeah.
That's fine with the maker of the motion.
So does that work in terms of staff?
Let me just explain. So the way that it works when you're developing a facility like this is if you have, and Mr. Gerbrand in his presentation touched on this a bit, if you say, you know, try to save more bridges that are close to the end of their useful life, there are, although we might be able to save some money up front when we're building the facility, there are longer term cost implications that over the life of the project may not really be advisable. So meaning that if we say try to save a bridge, a timber trestle, for example, timber trestles need maintenance much more frequently than say any other kind of bridge, really, concrete or steel. So by kind of trying to limp along with some of these older bridges that require a lot more maintenance, we're adding an obligation to our operation and maintenance expenses for this facility. And that also, you know, has considerations for the quality of service as well. If we have to shut down the facility to do maintenance all the time on these old, you know, timber bridges, it's not really going to result in, you know, favorable ridership if we're having to take it out of service. You know, if people are really depending on this type of facility to get to where they need to go, we want it to be reliable. And so the other piece of it is funding and the availability of funding. There's much more availability of funding to build a project through grants than to maintain bridges over the life of the facility. So, you know, we're going to need a local funding source, right? And so by, again, limping along with a timber trestle, for example, we are straining that local funding source that we're going to need to operate and maintain this facility. So
on the other hand, we're going to need a local funding source to build the conservative approach, or the approach that's being, which is going to be an extremely significant local funding source at the kind of estimates that we're getting. I'm not sure every one of those bridges out there at the end of their useful life. And I went through the experience of working on the project that ultimately led to the rehabilitation of the West Cliff Bridge. And let me just say nothing negative about engineers, but I never met an engineer in that process who wouldn't want a concrete bridge to replace a timber bridge. That just comes with being an engineer. And so I'm not unsympathetic to that point of view. I understand it, but there's maintenance needs and maintenance needs. Some maintenance needs require closing the bridge. Some maintenance needs can be done while the service goes on. What I'm asking for is just taking another look at, is it possible to really go and have an alternative that would allow for the, at least in the area of the bridges, retaining some of those existing bridges that may not be at the end. I think the Capitola Trestle is going to have to be replaced. That's expensive. I don't think there's any way around it. I don't know anything about any of these other bridges. And some of them may be replaced. Some of them, it may not really be necessary to replace them and still get a reasonable, useful life or have maintenance, some rehabilitation that could go on that could allow for ongoing maintenance that wouldn't be that needing to close. I mean, I'm just asking in the end, given that this is a very significant cost to the overall project, that we look at some alternatives as ways of trying to reduce those costs. I think that's the intention of the motion.
Okay.
I'm going to accept that part
of the motion. Okay. So is there any other further comment? Then we'll...
So I'm new here, and I might ask some questions, but maybe if the engineer could step back up to the podium, I think that would be helpful. I'm guessing you've all done very excellent and thorough due diligence on the bridges in terms of the report that was just presented to us, correct?
There we go. Okay. Our approach with the bridges, and going back to April, which we weren't on the commission at that point, our approach with the bridges for evaluation was to do a cursory inspection of the timber bridges because prior reports have indicated that they're in deteriorated state and have recommended replacement for those bridges. For the concrete bridges, without doing extreme investigations using X-ray and gamma, investigations to understand what's going on with the steel reinforcing, you can only do so much from the outside. So we did, again, a kind of cursory inspection of those to confirm what the prior inspection reports have undertaken and concluded. For the steel inspection bridges, those were... I wouldn't call it extremely detailed, but we did do an inspection looking at the joints and the steel members to understand the condition of the existing bridges and compared those against prior inspection reports. in indicated areas where the steel had deteriorated more and the corrosion had lessened the amount of steel remaining, and then did an evaluation to load rate those to understand what is the capacity of those bridges, and then we can compare those against the anticipated loading.
Okay, so it sounds like there was excellent diligence. Just you're saying it was cursory, but it sounds like from the last inspection to now, there's even further deterioration. So
Correct.
In terms of the contingency, what I saw was like a 50% contingency. So is the $980 million, does that include the contingency, or is the contingency 50% more of that sum?
It includes it.
It does include it. Okay, so it could be a lot less than $980 million potentially.
Yeah, as we, as I described, as you go through all the steps, you are able to refine that. The contingency element included things such as unknowns about some environmental sensitivities and some, you know, foundation types. So in a perfect world, yeah, the it could come down a lot. What we anticipated to be somewhere, you know, in that range.
Okay, thank you. And okay, and so I'm just trying to really deeply understand this. It is my understanding that the current tracks that are on the line have almost come to the end of their useful life. Is that true?
The tracks themselves?
Yes.
No, they can be still used.
They can. Because what I've heard from many people, and also some people at the RTC, is that they are almost at the end of their useful life.
Sure.
So the current use of the line is freight, and freight has different standards than, say, passenger. So currently our tracks are in, you can't really operate, or it wouldn't be advisable to operate a facility like this on the existing track. There's certain upgrades, like having continuous welded rail instead of sections of rail, that are obvious upgrades that we need to make to the track bed. So we do anticipate, by transitioning this facility from a single track freight line to an actual passenger rail facility, to be replacing the track bed.
Okay. Another question I have, and maybe this, you don't know the answer to this, but I know that this is supposed to be zero emission and likely electrified type of a line with the Moss Landing fire that we have. People, there's many people in this county super concerned with battery storage facility and how are we going to store enough electricity to operate a train like this, et cetera. Does the train that is proposed, I mean, maybe we don't know yet, but will there have to be some type of battery storage for a train? Yes.
I'm acknowledging that. I understand the question. We don't exactly know what the vehicle will be. So the current technology as it exists today wouldn't allow for a battery electric train.
Okay.
Battery electric trains can't go the distance between charging that our rail line would require. Same thing with, you know, overhead catenary. That's only for a portion of the line. That would be, if you were to have overhead catenary charging it for, you know, from Santa Cruz to Capitola, and then you go off of it to get to Santa Cruz, we wouldn't be able to cover that distance. So likely it would either be, if you were looking at existing technologies today, for zero emission, a hydrogen hybrid vehicle, such as the one that is currently in testing in San Bernardino, the Aero Service. And that one, they're completing testing very soon, and they're going to put the operation into operation as soon as like the end of this month or April. So that would be an interesting one to see how that actually works in operation. If we didn't use a system like that, and we don't want to use a fossil fuel vehicle, then overhead catenary is likely where we would have to land, and that would require catenary installation on the basically entire length of the line.
Okay, and I apologize to the public if all of this has already been talked about in prior meetings. This is just all kind of new to me. Um, I know some people have talked about, you know, the Pajaro Station, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I put my daughter, my own daughter, what I thought was going to be an Amtrak train down to Santa Barbara this summer and back. And what it ended up being, I bought a $75 or $80 ticket, and what it ended up being was a Greyhound bus. And that was very disappointing because she was packed in there like a sardine with people who had just been released from jail, people with serious mental health issues. She was scared. It wasn't a pleasant experience. So I'm just going to lay that right there. By putting more and more and more money into this particular project to study its feasibility, et cetera, is it preventing us, and maybe Sarah can speak to this because this is something I hear too, is it preventing us from putting money in other areas that are sorely needed in this county for road repair, other transportation projects that might benefit the public?
So currently the funding being used for the concept development is a combination of Measure D rail category funds, which are available for infrastructure repairs as well as analysis, including environmental analysis. That's in the expenditure plan for that. It's 9% of our measure. Sorry, 8%.
8%.
8%, thank you. 8% of our measure. I wish it was 9. And the other source of funds is a state grant we received, TRSIP, Transit Intercity Rail Capital Program, and as well as SB 125, kind of a one-time influx of transit funding that our region received in 2023 that we programmed to this project. So currently we do not have additional kind of discretionary grants that we would otherwise be able to use on roads or anything like that. These are kind of funds that are for rail,
okay,
for the
great
current work.
Thank you, Sarah. So most of you may know that I grew up in Monterey County because I talked about this a lot during my campaign. In Monterey County, we've had a beautiful trail for decades that is well used and well loved. I really want to see us put a trail in right now. Our public, our citizens, South County, Mid County, we should not have to wait. I don't think you truly understand the pain and suffering of sitting in this traffic day after day after day. No one seems to care, especially North County, because it doesn't really affect them. But for people, many of them of color, many of them young women who are starting their careers in healthcare and up at UCSC or county government, who have to sit in that horrible traffic day after day, we're tired of it. And I'm not necessarily against a rail plan. I think if it's feasible, great. But right now, the trail needs to be put down. And if that means pulling up the existing rails because, A, we can't use them really anyway, that it's ridiculous to say that we could never have a rail line there. The other thing I just want to say is that where the existing rail corridor is nowhere near where people would go for their work or anything else. And again, I'm new, but I don't understand why we couldn't elevate and go up and down Soquel and maybe down Freedom into Watsonville. Why does the rail have to be on the corridor there? Why can't that just be a beautiful, beautiful world-class trail for our citizens and our tourists, et cetera? So anyway, that's how I feel about it. I've always said this. This should not come as a surprise to anybody, and this is the way I feel. So anyway, thank you.
Can we vote on the motion, please?
Thank you. If there's no further comment, we'll just end it with I'll be supportive of the motion because.
Commissioner Hernandez, I have a comment.
Okay, that's online, yeah.
So I am one of the people who sits in traffic and commutes to UCFC, and the trail is not going to help me. What am I supposed to ride my bike to work? I need a train. So I'm for the train. I've been for the train. It's feasible. Other counties have figured it out. And the fact that we keep having this conversation is pretty ridiculous to me. We keep hearing the same tired arguments over and over. Don't speak for me, because trail is not going to help me at all. That's not going to help people who commute. That's ridiculous to even say. So those of us who commute would love a train, regardless if we have to go a little bit out of our way to mitigate the stress from sitting there day after day. I really appreciate all of staff's hard work on this, and I will be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll be supportive of the amendment and the motion, especially with the cost savings, taking a look at cost savings alternatives, and if we can have a roll call.
Commissioner Keeley?
Aye.
Commissioner Clark?
Aye.
Commissioner Hernandez?
Aye.
Commissioner Alternate Shiffrin?
Aye.
Commissioner DeSerpa?
No.
Commissioner Koenig?
Aye.
Commissioner Martinez?
Aye.
Commissioner Downing? Commissioner Quitos Carter?
Aye.
Commissioner Rotkin?
Aye.
And that passes with one no.
Great. Motion passes with one no from Commissioner Serpa. If we can move on now to
adjournment.
Yes. Next meetings. Next.